23rd of July, 1976, Ivan Domgor and I are interviewing in Blair, Nebraska. What is your full name, sir?
Paul Christian Edward Nyholm.
How did you ever inherit, or how did they know you were going to be good enough to take care of three given names? There must be a story behind that.
I was the firstborn son, so Paul is my special name, and my parents thought it means worker, but it does mean small, as you know from Latin. But they had an explanation, means worker, and they wanted me to be worker in the kingdom of God, either a missionary or a pastor. And Christian is named after my grandfather, who was a pastor, and Edward named after my mother's father. So they thought that I could inherit some of the best from both my father's and my mother's side.
Beautiful, sir. Where were you born and raised in Denmark?
I was born in Bethlehem. And the day after I was born in Bethlehem, people met one another on the street and they said, "A child is born in Bethlehem." I said, "We know that. Well, it happened yesterday." Bethlehem was the name of what might call a mission house. It was built under the leadership of my father, who was a preacher, but wanted to have a building where you can gather for Sunday school and edification meetings for the laymen would speak. And upstairs was an apartment, and that's where I was born. And when I couldn't, as a boy, remember when I was born, I looked at the cornerstone of the building. It said 1895.
And what date?
September 27th.
I see. And what town or what city is Bethlehem near?
Bethlehem is just a mission house in the city of Joring, H-J-O-R-R-I-N-G, which is the largest city in Vendsyssel, section of northwest Denmark and Jutland.
What was your father's full name?
My father's full name was Johannes Peter Nyholm.
And do you remember your mother's maiden name?
Ellen Maria Bartsch.
Now we're both...
Bartsch is really Austrian family. My mother's grandfather immigrated from Austria to Denmark.
Oh, what year did they immigrate to Denmark?
I don't know, but it was... I don't know what year it was, but there are several artists by the name Bartsch in Austria, and I have been able to trace the family on their side. But my mother was quite artistic, and so was an uncle of mine by the name Bartsch, and several paintings preserved from him. On my father's side, I can trace it back to about, about 1650. And on his side, it's open?
Yes.
By the way, when my brother was employed by the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., he traced on my my grandmother's side, that her line goes clear back to a brother of the famous Bishop Hans Adolf Borsum, who has written so many beautiful hymns.
Yes, I have seen his name after many of the beautiful hymns he wrote.
Have you been in Denmark?
Yes, sir.
Have you seen the place where he was born, or where he was a bishop in Ribe?
Yes, I have, sir.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ribe is one of my favorite towns in Denmark. Mm-hmm.
It probably has more monuments than any other city in Denmark.
I think so.
One of Dronning Dagmar.
You then had quite an education in Denmark.
Well, I graduated from university in the Divinity School in 1921.
In Denmark?
In Denmark, yeah. Copenhagen.
And when did
I attended probably the oldest college in Denmark, the Metropolitan College in Copenhagen, which is older than Eton and some of the other famous colleges in Denmark, going clear back to about 1200.
Oh, you really went to a school that had terrific background.
Good traditions, yeah.
Wow.
We had the reason I got in there, I transferred from Aarhus, which is the next the largest city in Denmark, and I could only get in there because I wanted to study the classical languages, and there were not very many that wanted to do that. We were only four. We had Latin six times a week and Greek six times a week.
I understood that you were quite a Grecian scholar.
Well, not too much. I taught Greek when I came to Canada. We started a high school, and I taught Greek. And I taught Greek here down at college, too. Did you ever hear of John Lunn? He's quite a well-known librarian.
No.
He graduated as number one in one of the last high schools. I think it was in Oakland, California, and has been active in a number of different activities, international. For a number of years, I think he was in Geneva, Switzerland. Well, he was one of my students here at Dana College in Greek.
Did you, this is a foolish question, did you speak Greek with a Danish accent?
Yes, that is, I couldn't hardly speak Greek, although I did send a greeting in Greek today to one of my former students of Greek, so, who is here in town, Kauris Kairoine. Grace and peace. But I didn't speak Greek, but I read Greek, and I noticed when I came to America, we of course pronounce the Greek words somewhat different from what they do in America.
Mm-hmm. What year did you come to the United States?
1922, August 22nd.
Why did you leave Denmark and come to the United States? Oh, you came to Canada first.
No, I came to directly here to Blair.
Oh.
This may seem kind of foolish to you, but the time when I was graduated from University Divinity School in Copenhagen, there was a shortage of pastors because the part of Schleswig had just been returned to Denmark, and for that reason a number of German pastors decided to go south, and also teachers. So I was called on the phone constantly if I would be pastor here, pastor there, but I said no, because a friend of mine and I had organized a society for eradication of young green pastors. We felt that no one should go into the ministry before they had some real experience, and we wouldn't start the ministry before we were in AIDS when Jesus started his public ministry. He was about 30, Luke says. So either was my friend president, and I was president, the other was vice president. But we did not accept any other members because the others could decide for themselves.
That was a very exclusive organization.
Yeah. And by the strange way, I then was ordained. There was this 50 years ago in Bopaka, Wisconsin, in 1926, when I was, let's see, is that right? Yes, then I was 30 years of age. But my friend did not seek ordination before he was 70 years of age.
Oh, but I still want to come back. Why did you come to the States?
Well, then, I had to do something before I got to be 30 to gain experience to be a good pastor. And I learned about that one of my friends had obtained a job as a private tutor for the Danish ambassador in Constantinople. So I thought that would be wonderful if we could get a job like that. So I hurried up at the State Department and asked if they didn't have another job for me. No, I didn't think they needed any. I said, what about Peking? Well, I said, the ambassador has a nice young girl, about 21 years of age, but I'd like to teach her. Because they laughed only. I said, what about Buenos Aires or some other place where El Ambassador has just been married about a month ago. We don't expect any children there yet. So there was no possibility. Then I learned about a Danish school in Tandil, Argentina. And I wrote to them, and they said that they needed a man to my qualifications, and they would be glad to have me. And if I would stay 3 years, they'd pay one-way transportation, and 6 years, they would pay the traveling expenses both ways. But it was fairly expensive to go to Argentina, and I didn't want to tie myself down to 6 years. So.
What was the name of that school again?
It was, I can't remember the name of the college, but it was a Danish Argentine college. It still exists, as far as I know, in Tandil, T-A-N-D-I-L, Argentina. There's quite a settlement of Danes in Argentina because its climate is pretty congenial to Danish people.
But I still want to find out how you came to the States.
Yeah, okay. Well then, I looked around, and one day I can still see it very clearly before me. I walked down the broad stairway, outdoor stairway, from the State Museum for Art in Østre Anlæg in Copenhagen. Maybe you have seen that gallery.
Yes, sir.
And as I walked down the steps, I saw coming up the steps the shoemaker from Jerusalem. That was a man I had known in Denmark who had gone to Dana College, and they called him Jerusalem because he had written the book of Jerusalem. And I had seen in the paper that he had just been graduated from the theological department here at Blair. And he had seen in the paper in Denmark that I'd been graduated from university. So we congratulated one another. And I said then to him, I'm happy to see you for one reason. Can you give me a name of a couple of schools in America where you think I might apply successfully to teach? Well, he said, there's only one subject you can teach, that's Danish. There's only one school I know of where you'd feel at home, that's Dana College. But they have an excellent teacher in Danish, so I don't think there's anything to do. Well, he added, there is a fairly good possibility that this young lady soon will get married, and then there will be a vacancy. And I said, I surely hope she will. Her name was Maria Brandt, and she lives today in Montreal, where she's married to a pastor who's now retired. We talked to her last fall. We were on the way to Denver and stopped over in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So I wrote to Dana College, but did not get any reply. But then, strangely enough, 3 times in succession, I met a person from Dana College.
Amazing.
There were a lot of Danish tourists in Denmark, but 3 times in succession, I met a person. The first time was around Easter in 1922. I came back from Easter vacation in Germany. I was teaching at Seoul Academy. Have you seen that building? That's an old boarding school, the largest boarding school in Denmark.
No,
I was teaching there at the time. And so happy at that time, I walked through the whole train to find an interesting person to talk to. So I spotted one. I sat down. I remember very clearly I started the conversation. A little chilly in Denmark, it was warm on Berlin. Well, he said it was warm on Paris. I just come from there. So I said, well, are you not an American? I thought I could detect he was American. Yes, he said. So I said to him, that's where I would like to go. Oh, he said, where would you like to go? Well, I said, I'd like to go to the state of Nebraska. Nebraska, he said, that's where I live. What will you do in Nebraska? Oh, I'd like to teach Danish at Dana College. Dana College, he said, that's where I'm studying. But now he had to excuse me, my train stopped and I had to say goodbye. So I thought it was kind of strange that we meet a man from Dana College, but then he left. And next time, and that was to my good luck, I was going to the Central YMCA in Copenhagen together with my dad. There was a farewell party for a large group of people going out as missionaries either to China or India. And my father was the editor of the paper for the society, the oldest Danish church paper. He was editor for about 25 years. He gave me my first journalistic training. We came a little late and we couldn't find two seats together at one of the small tables. So someone said, come up to the head table here and we have room for you here. And then I spotted one seat open, and then almost identical, the same conversation took place as before on that train. Nebraska, Blair, what will you do in Blair? Oh, I'll teach Danish at Dana College. Well, but I said, I applied a long time ago, but I haven't had any answer. And he said, well, we have an excellent president of Dana College, but he's not very quick to answer letters. He has too many things to do. But I tell you what you do, you write to Pastor Andreas in Cedar Falls, Iowa. He's born in Denmark and he's president of the synod that operates the college. And he's very interested in having contact from Denmark.
What was Pastor Andreasen's first name?
M.N. Andreasen.
Thank you.
He later on went to Denmark, became pastor in Ulsted, in Wenceslas. I visited with him there. Well, then, in the meantime, as I said, there was a shortage of teachers, and I was teaching at Soar Academy, but only for one semester. I was substituting for a teacher. And one day I got a visit from the president of Birkerød Statsskole. Birkerød is a suburb of Copenhagen, beautifully located in a wooded area. And he offered me a teaching position. I said, you can choose your own subjects. We want very much to have you come. And I said, I would like very much too to accept your offer, except for the fact that I have already applied for a position in America. Well, he said, where is that? Well, I said, to tell the truth, I have not been able to find it on the map. He said, is it way out in the prairie? Well, it's very likely, I said, I don't know, but I'll tell you this, that if I get a reply from a school in America before my application to your school is processed, I have to go through the Department of Education, I'll take whatever comes first. Well, he said, that's don't consider that school out there in the prairie in America, but come to us. Well, I said, I have applied and I want to take it if I get a reply. And a couple of days or a couple of weeks maybe later, I happened to meet him on the street in Copenhagen. And he said, I'm glad to see you. Just come from the Department of Education and your application has been accepted. Well, I said, that's too late because yesterday I got a telegram from Dana College and it read, your application is accepted. You will receive keep and some salary. Keep, I mean, so room and board. So on the basis of I would get my keep and some salary.
You came to the States.
I came to Dana College, yeah.
And you have been with Dana College ever since.
Well, I have not been. I was here from 22 to 25. And then I studied at the Northwestern University and became a pastor in Des Moines, Iowa, from 26 to 29. And then in Canada from 29 to 35. And then I was called back and came back to teach in a seminary. Then I taught there from 45 to 55. And then at Wartburg Theological Seminary in Dubuque, Iowa, from 55 to 66.
You spoke English when you came here.
Yes, it was not the best because, as I indicated before, I specialized in the classical languages. And in one of the colleges I attended, I had German instead of English. So my English was not so very good, but of course, tried to pick up, but still have a dialect.
Mm-hmm. How did your parents feel about you coming to the United States?
Well, my father had always said that when you get a little older, you should go out and see some other country. And of course, he had been a missionary in China, and on his way to China, in order to enlist support from Danish Americans, he had gone through America, and he and my mother had told me about the wonderful things in America. That was one reason I decided to go to America. So he really had encouraged me to go, but I helped him a great deal with the paper of which he was editor, was assistant to him in many ways. And so when it came to the fact that I said I'm going to America, stay over there 2 years, he was not very happy about it. I remember he followed me down to the boat and told me some things he had never told me before, if I should get in trouble, of how I could go to God and how God would help. Some very strange incidents. So that's father and son getting a real intimate conversation before the leave. And then, of course, he had to go down. He stood there, and I looked at him. And many times at night, I would wake up and see these two big eyes. Why are you leaving me?
How did your mother feel?
Well, my mother didn't say too much about it. She understood that I would like to go. By the way, do you know how I came to America?
No.
I obtained a job as an eye doctor, and all day long, although I was not experienced, across the Atlantic every day I peeled eyes out of potatoes.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had two sisters, no, only one, because one died, and then three brothers.
What were their names?
The sisters or the
yes,
brothers?
Both.
My oldest sister was Maria, and the younger sister, Anna, she was working in kindergarten in Copenhagen. For a while, she had the best education of any kindergarten teacher in Denmark. Studied in Sweden and Germany and so forth. My oldest brother is Jens. I mentioned him before. He now lives at Santa Barbara and has an office in the library there, or lives in his own house and partly semi-retired, but he still buys books for both University of Evanston, Northwestern University, in University of California, Santa Barbara. He was in Denmark this year. Has been in Denmark 13 times buying books. Then my next brother is retired. He was director of a potato flour mill that exported a good deal of flour, potato flour to America, and the youngest brother had been in railroad business, retired now too.
You mentioned that one of your brothers came over here. Did any other member of the family come to the States?
My younger sister and my, I made a mistake, I should have said Hans, my brother, the flour mill, he's older than Jens, Hans, Jens, and Axel. My brother Johannes came with my sister Anna here, what is it, 3 years ago?
In 71,
visited with us, and my brother out in California. But none of them to stay.
You married a Danish woman.
Yes.
Would you tell us how you met her?
I really met her on the bus. We were on the choir trip. The first time the Dana College Choir had an extended tour. They had had the short trips to Council Bluffs or Freeman and so forth. But the first extended tour through a couple of states was taken, was undertaken in 1925, and Ingrid and I were in the choir, and we managed to sit together and get really acquainted.
Yeah. Well, okay.
But before that time, I had coached her to take part in the declamatory contest. She recited Hans Christian Andersen's story of her mother. And so we had had, we had gone out together sometimes, but we really got more intimately acquainted on this bus trip. Mm-hmm. And the man who directed the choir just died in Eugene, Oregon, the 14th of July.
What was his name?
His name was Waldo B. Nielsen. He was an excellent choir director. He directed also the choir in 1929 when Dana College Choir for the first time went to Denmark. They've been there several times since.
How much did your wife's Danishness have to do with your interest in her?
How much did
her Danishness have with your to do with your interest in her?
Well, of course, when you fall in love, you don't give reasons for how long the nose is, how blue the eyes are, but I'm sure that we felt akin, we felt attracted to one another because we had the same background from Denmark.
Did you two speak Danish when you first got married?
Yes, we did.
We have spoken Danish all our lives.
But of course, when children came, then we spoke Danish mostly when we didn't want them to hear what we had to say, but then they learned it.
How many children did you have?
Three children.
Would you give me their names?
The oldest is Paul Johannes, so he has my first name and my father's first name. And the second is Gunnar. G-U-N-N-A-R. The youngest is Ellen. They're all married.
Do they carry on any Danish customs in their home?
Yes, especially Ellen, because she went with us on a trip to Denmark. We went through seven countries, but she liked Denmark best of all.
Was there a little bit prejudice mixed with that decision or that opinion?
Yes, I think so. I think so. But, and of course it was also because we were so cordially received by members. To speak in various congregations and always succeeded in getting some more subscribers. But then there was no real field. I have canvassed every home in the vicinity of our church, and I couldn't find a single child that didn't go to Sunday school someplace. There were other Lutheran churches close by. So in the 3 years I was there, I never had a single person in confirmation class. So my father kept on writing to me, why do you waste your time in a little congregation that can grow, and where the members are very easily could go to other churches? So I learned about the congregation in Canada that had been looking for a pastor for more than a year without being able to get any. And a friend of mine induced me to go up there, and he was a layman, had traveled in all five continents on his own expense, seeking Danish people and encouraging them to go to church and so forth. He said, you should go to Canada. So I first answered, I don't see why I should move, because the congregation here is small, but I have many other opportunities. But finally I felt, well, if they really need a pastor up there, I ought to go up there. So I wrote to him, you may tell the congregation that I would consider a call if they're interested. And so we landed there in 1929, stayed on there. I had the most happy experiences.
What was the name of the city, and what?
The name of the congregation was Bethany, and there was a little annex. And that was the oldest Danish congregation in Canada, and it was organized in Omaha, Nebraska, because a number of people in Kennard, Council Bluffs, and Omaha decided to take homesteads in Canada.
What city, town?
Well, it was not really a city. The name of the post office, that was about all there was, two or three houses, a store, and a post office was in the store and a school. And the name of the place was Dixon, D-I-C-K-S-O-N, 22 miles about west of Innisfail, about halfway between Calgary and Edmonton, the two largest cities in Alberta.
One of the reasons I'm interested in the names of the cities, someone else doing this work, such as I'm doing, may be able to go to those cities to see how those congregations and the Danish people are maintaining their Danish culture.
Mm-hmm.
So excuse me for being rather silly about that.
No.
Just a few moments ago, though, you mentioned something about Grand View.
Yeah.
Would you tell us about Grand View?
Well, Grand View College.
And your experience there.
Well, Grand View College, are you familiar with the school?
Yes, I just talked with Dr. Johannes Knudsen.
Oh, yes. He was present at that time. Let's see, was it? No, he was not. That was another time. Let's see. I remember who actually was present, the college.
But Ruth Holland?
Grandview College, of course, was the center for the other synod. So in a way it was kind of strange, because there had been the best relationship in Des Moines between the two synods. But during the time when I was in Des Moines, I had very, very friendly relationship with Ruth Holtman. We had joint services for special occasions and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I got to have many friends through teaching there. I got to have many friends in the Grundtvigian Synod, as we call it, the old Danish church.
Did you give your sermons, did you give your confirmation and the Sunday schools in Danish?
Well, I didn't have any confirmation in
That's right.
in Des Moines. But we did have Danish services every Sunday morning and English services in the evening. So there was a transition period.
Now,
when I came to Dixon, practically everything was Danish, but we began to stress English evening services. But our main attendance was for the Danish in the morning.
Was your change to the English services in Dixon generated by yourself or by the congregation?
I suppose I could say that I was the one that took the initiative, because the old Danes were pretty satisfied. But there was a growing need for it, and that was seen especially when we started new Sunday schools. I think we started 5 new Sunday schools. They were in the outlying districts, and of course had to be English.
Your father could not have complained about that.
No, he couldn't. We discovered that there was a law, and I suppose that's still in effect, that you can teach religion in public schools, provided you don't have any sectarian emphasis. You have the consent of the school board, and that any parents or any child can demand to be accepted. Therefore, this instruction must be given either the first half hour of the school day or more often in the last half hour. So we started to do that, and there was never anyone that objected to sectarian preaching, or no child left. In fact, both teachers and pupils seemed to enjoy it. I had some large pictures to show and told them stories. Ingford took 2 schools and I took 5, so we covered 7. And that, of course, was in English.
That's amazing. Okay.
Well, this friend of mine, Jens Dixon, a lay preacher, outstanding ability, great student of Søren Kierkegaard, had said to me that he thought there was need for a high school in Dixon. When I finally decided I would leave Des Moines, if I got a call, I said to him, I shall be glad to accept a call if the congregation wants me. But I can't see any reason for starting a high school. And he answered back, I understand that, but you will when you get up there. So the situation was this, that there was no hotel or restaurant. There was just a store and a couple of private homes, and then the parsonage. And when the school inspector once a year came to check up on the public school, he had dinner with the pastor, because there was no other place to go. And he said to me one day, it's a shame that there are so many bright young people in this school who ought to go on to high school, but what can we do about it? Can you start a high school? I said, it's a strange thing you would say that, because I've been thinking about it. I can't see how it could be done. And he said, you could start it in your church basement. And the only requirement would be that you have the full support of the local school board, that you have a sufficient number of students, I think about 20. Then you can get government support, and you collect a fee from students who come outside your own school district. And so we did. We followed his advice. We were at that time the only school in Alberta who was financed and organized in that way. But there was no trouble with the school board, because every one of the school board members were also members of the church. And in this high school, I taught Latin and then religion. I was very careful in not having any sectarian emphasis. And no one objected, except one time a woman said, you should not teach your Lutheran doctrines to my girl, because I'm a Presbyterian. And I checked up, I hadn't even known it myself, but the book we used was the Presbyterian book. But
who were the other teachers at that school?
The very fortunate thing which made the school possible, and it would not have been possible without that, was that the daughter of the first pastor in the congregation, Elsa Gunderson, had a lovely letter from her the other day, had signed up to teach in the school, but I persuaded her that she could ask to be relieved and then come in and teach in the high school. And she said she would do that. And it was very late in the year, it was not more than a month or so before the school should start. So she and I, and maybe somewhere else along, drove up to Edmonton and talked to the chief inspector of schools. And he called in a lawyer, and we talked for hours and hours. And he finally said, I don't see any reason why we could not grant you permission, provided you have a certain amount of money guaranteed so you can pay the expenses and provided you follow our regular procedures. And I had told a number of the leading men in the congregation to meet in the parsonage at that very night, and I came back then to report. They were all there, we were a little late because it takes a long time. I went in and I said to them, I locked the doors, and you will not be able to get out before you put your name on this piece of paper, sign yourself for a guaranteed contribution. $100. I have put my name down here and you do the same thing. And one of the men said, it seemed to me that one of the windows there would be possible to open and I could get out without paying the, not promising the $100, but.
You were a very persuasive man, sir.
Well, and when I had a real conviction, then I would do what I could.
How did you leave?
Brother, may I just ask, have you put it on?
It's on. How long did you continue with your high school program in Canada?
Well, personally, I continued, of course, no longer than I stayed in Dixon. But the high school went on for a long time after that, until finally there was new arrangement districts, so that this particular high school could not continue any longer. But I will say this, that now in August, 1st of August, they have a reunion of former students. We only had one before, and it was very, very impressive. The students would come up there and say who they were and what they were doing. I think about close to 20 have gone out as missionaries to different parts of the world, and several have gone into the ministry and become doctors and so forth, become leaders. And many of them, when they came there, they were kind of backward. And there has been, like you had, they said your average was 26. Well, our average probably was, when we started, well, close to that, 24 or something like
24
that.
24 years of age.
Yeah. And so they were not fooling around. And that accounts for the fact that at least one time, I think a couple of times, our school rated as the highest in Alberta, because you know the system that the last class or whatever it is, all papers, examinations, they were sent to Edmonton and corrected by a person that doesn't know a bit about the students. So it's a pretty objective standard when you say that this school rated at highest. It's not due to patronizing of some local teachers.
Oh, that's lovely. You know, I'm sorry that we have to leave Canada and go along, but my tape is...
Yeah, sure.
So after Canada...
After Canada, I came to... I was asked to come and teach at Dana College, teach Danish at Dana College, and also teach in the seminary, and said no, because there were only three teachers in the seminary, so we had to divide all the subjects. Then we had to give attention to the college, they wanted me to teach Danish and also religion, and travel to Bible camps and solicit students. So I just said no. But then they called me back, so I came here and they had some wonderful years in the seminary. Until then, the professor died in the Wartburg Seminary in Dubuque, Iowa, and they wanted me to substitute for a year until they could finally settle on a good choice of professor of church history. But it ended up that when the year was over, I was asked to stay. And then it ended up that the whole seminary here was transferred to Dubuque, Iowa.
You not only transferred, but the school transferred with you.
Well, I mean, after I've been there for a year or so. They were anxious to have a merger of the various synods. So in preparation for that, since there was pretty much a foregone conclusion that the merger would come in all probability, they thought that the men now from now on should be trained in a larger seminary to fit in better into the new synod.
Well, they were anxious to get the seminary off the campus here too.
Yeah, that's another thing. They felt that Dr. Morton, who was president that time, he felt that the seminary was too much of a burden of the financial expenses, because we never had more than about 20 students, and they gradually had increased the number of faculty members from 3 to 5. Now, of course, they also taught in the college, but at least a good deal of that time, half of the time, was given to completely to the seminary, so it was fairly expensive. Mm-hmm. So I was asked then to accept this job, and I did.
And you were at Dubuque how many years then?
From 55 to 66. Then I reached the age of retirement, so I had to leave, and we didn't know where to go. There were different possibilities. And one day, Ingford came over to chapel on the day of Ascension, and she prayed that God give us an answer now. And when shortly after she came back to our apartment, telephone rang, and one of my former students in Omaha, Pastor DeYoung, asked if I would be his assistant pastor. So we accepted that.
And back to Omaha and Blair.
Yeah.
You were mentioning a few minutes ago, when the tape was not running, some of the advantages to the student for a college like Dana.
Yes.
Would you mind repeating that?
Well, of course, Dana has not always been ideally, but it should. It has always been difficult to find teachers who completely understood the background and the ideals of Dana College. But we could say this, that we have a faculty which is pretty much interested in the students. When we got a new president here a few years ago, he interviewed various students and found out that practically there was unanimity about the fact that the students were given attention, you know, not just a number, but they could go to the members of the faculty and they get attention and help. So the fact that the school is small means that there is a pretty good relationship between the number of faculty members and students. Classes are not too big, and the students get to know one another. So it has somewhat of a family spirit. Students live here. Most of them, we have a few, of course, that live downtown, but the great number of students live in the dormitory. And I think that you can understand that we have one advantage over you, that the students get to know one another more. And I think that you'll admit, too, that all of you are good teachers. So all the good teachers, the student can actually learned almost as much from his fellow students as he can from the professor.
In fact, sometimes I think more so.
In their discussions and activities. And I think we can say that although we have not by any means reached perfection, we find that consistently that when the speakers from the American Scandinavian Foundation come here, we have it in a chapter. So we get all these men we sent out from New York to go to the various chapters, Rock Island and so forth, and end up out in Santa Barbara. We find that we often have more students out for a lecture than the lecturer had when he went to Wisconsin or Minneapolis or some big university.
Would you feel it improper for me to ask you to mull over out loud, orally, some of the Grundtvigian concepts of education and teaching?
Well, I think that one of the basic ideas in the Grundtvig Folk High School, which of course is only one section of the program of education, the public schools and so forth, but in the Folk High School, the basic idea is this, that it's more important that you learn to live than you learn some facts, and that all teaching should be of such a nature, whether it's history or it's geography or art or music, that it meets the need of the student, and they're not crammed facts into their heads, but they're giving living illustrations so that the teaching given in this way will influence the student to be a better person and to have a richer outlook on life. Now, of course, the methods have somewhat changed from the early days when Christian Carl started the folk high schools in Denmark, where most of the students were very limited in their understanding or knowledge of, and they had to have lectures. They couldn't read too much themselves. They wouldn't get too much out of it. Today, of course, a great emphasis is on self-study and on smaller groups that meet the discussion. But the purpose is still to help a person to not get a better job, but learn to live a richer life. And I think that this has been carried through. I'll just give you one striking illustration. When my brother and I, many years ago, were working for a farmer in Norway, the first week or so we were thinning out beets. And when we came to the end of the row, the farmer, Peter Chillo, took one row, and my brother the next, and I the last. So we followed one another. And we came to the end of the row, then we paused for a little while and discussed the difference between Bergelen and Velhaven or Bjornsen and Ibsen. Well, what farmer in America would employ a person from another country and then sit and discuss literature with them out in the field? And the fact that people in Denmark take more time to live, and that's not entirely due to influence of the Grundtvigian Folk High Schools, but I think they have a great deal to do with it, because approximately one third of all young people in the country in the farm areas have attended the Folk High School. And then another thing that is outstanding, there's no drudgery, there's a joyful spirit. Generally you begin a period by singing. And they have a book with about 1,000 songs in, and by the end of the school semester, they know a lot of these songs by heart. And that's one of the great riches in Scandinavia, it seems to me, compared with America. Now, we have some beautiful folk songs and so forth, but you cannot compare that with the marvelous heritage they have in Scandinavia.
Paul, you said that when you came to America, you only wanted to stay here for 2 years, and that's 54 years ago.
Yes.
What changed your mind?
And when I came to Brooklyn, I attended the district meeting of the church, and when that was over, it lasted for about 3 days, I said to one of the pastors who happened to be born in Germany and had learned Danish because he found that he felt at home in the church of Danish background more than the church of German background. I said to him, when I come to Dana College, I'll say to them, the very first day I arrive, I'll stay for 1 year as we have agreed on, but after that year I'll go right back to Denmark, because it's absolutely hopeless to try to interest people in learning Danish. They misuse the language, they mix up the English and the Danish, and they don't really know what Danish culture is, and they don't really care. And he said, you're absolutely wrong. We need a person who is familiar with Danish culture to tell these people what the treasure they have in their background from Borsen and Kingon, Grundtvig, and so many other things, intermission movement. And we need to learn the Danish language because that can enrich our lives. And I thought it was strange that Pastor Kloth, who had his German, has his theological training in Krupp in Germany, and didn't know any Danish when he came to America, was attracted to the Danish church, and now a German would tell me that I should stay in America. So quite a number of people with the same background as I trained at University of Copenhagen have come to America to be pastors or teachers in colleges or seminaries, and have gone back, and I happen to be the only one that stayed. And if you ask me why I stayed, I'm not so absolutely sure about it, because sometimes I have doubted whether I should go back. But I felt that there was indeed to, for the people who had Danish background, to know something about the country from which they had come. And I think that many will discover, as you have through your life, that although you are not born in Denmark, there still are some riches and some values in Denmark that ought to be transplanted.
Amen.
So I think that's the main reason. And then another thing that partly answers that question, when I became pastor in Chicago, when I studied at the university, mostly because a friend of mine, a very close friend, was going in as an army chaplain. He said, I expect the war to be over in a year or so, but I like this congregation that I worked in to be well taken care of. Will you do that? And then I'll come back after a year or so. Of course, the war lasted much longer. Then people said there were these Danes in Chicago. They like to drink beer and play cards, and they're not really interested in anything. And I said to myself, let's try, let's make a try. So we got together, we arranged folk meetings, as we called them. And I remember one rainy night out at Lane Technical High School, we had 1,800 people come out for a folk meeting and sing songs. We published a little book, 2,000 copies for Danish songs, and Danish songs of various kinds in English translation.